You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
I want to find out more about a new book which has revealed how an undercover FBI agent discovered an IRA smuggling route through Shannon Airport. The agent in question is David Rupert. He spent 7 years as a spy in the Provisional IRA and dissident Republican groups. He discovered that IRA members had someone working inside the airport who was able to help them come to and from the US in contravention of US anti-terrorism rules. That is one of many fascinating stories contained in The Accidental Spy, True Story by Clare native Sean O'Driscoll. And Sean joins us on the line now. Sean, good morning to you.
Morning, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good. And thanks for joining us. Tell me about David Rupert, first of all.
He's a New York trucker. He's 6 foot seven and about 21 stone. Very distinctive looking guy, which immediately brought him to the attention of a special branch when he was over in Ireland mixing with IRA people.
And how does that come about that a New York trucker ends up hanging out with IRA people?
Well, he was down in Florida, actually, and he was just cruising around the bars, and then he heard traditional music in an Irish bar across the road from the beach bar that he was in. So he wandered over there, you know, spent a few weeks getting to know people and stuff, and then he met this woman called Linda Vaughan, who was pretty high up in the Democratic Party, actually, and she was also in NORAID, which is the U.S. fundraising wing for the Provisional IRA. And, I mean, at that point, he was just a guy in a bar trying to chat up a woman. So she said that she was involved in Irish politics. And then he was frantically trying to remember anything he could about Ireland. And he knew nothing about Ireland, but he's just trying to bluff his way through it. And but they started dating. And then she invited him over to Sligo because at that time, Tallahassee, Florida, was going to be twinned with Sligo, and she was on the organizing committee. So he went over and he started meeting Irish Republicans, and bit by bit he started to get further into their world.
And he gained their trust, obviously, but at the same time, or shortly afterwards, it became somebody who was supplying information about them, it seems, as a spy?
That's right, yeah. The special branch noticed him a few times at different events, and they took photographs of him with a leading Republican outside a hotel in Sligo. And then they were really, really trying to find out who this guy was. So then they passed the information on to the FBI, who traced him to a trucking company in Chicago and came to visit him with the photographs and put them down on the table. And, you know, we're quite heavy-handed that he was in trouble and so on. And he said, I have nothing to say. And then they came back a second time and then a third time. And then, you know, he agreed that they would pay for his holidays in Ireland. And he thought that it was just free holidays and that he knew nothing anyway. So why not just get free money from the FBI? But of course, they did that deliberately, knowing that, you know, once you cross that line and you've agreed to something with them, then it's easier to pass on information. Yeah.
And we'll get on to the Shannon Airport story in a minute, because obviously that'll be of interest to people here in Clare. But what was he effectively gaining the trust of these people within the Republican movement and then behind their backs telling the FBI what they had planned?
Yeah, and in total, there was 2,300 emails between himself and the FBI and MI5. You know, so he provided an enormous amount of information. On top of, you know, when they came to visit in the States, of course, he was wearing an FBI wire on his body. So there was all that information too. You know, he was constantly on the go, constantly meeting people and constantly recording and sending emails and passing on information to the FBI.
And you've seen, as I understand it, these emails. What sort of stuff, and I don't know how much of it you can tell me, but what sort of stuff was he passing on?
Every single meeting, he had kind of an arrangement with his wife, Maureen, that he would come out of a meeting and then they would drive back to their accommodation, usually in Bundoran or Sligo. And then as they're going in the car, he would just start recounting everything that happened at the meeting while it was still fresh in his mind. And she would write it down. Then they would go back to their accommodation. He would write it on an email to the FBI, and then they would burn the notes in the sink. And they kept that up for a long time.
Okay. What was happening at Shannon Airport?
This is information. Actually, this is one of the first pieces of information he passed on to the FBI. He was getting to know a group of Provisional IRA members in Sligo, and it seemed like they were pretty serious people. I don't think the owner of Murray's Bar in Sligo would object to me saying that they were in Murray's Bar, because I interviewed him and he accepts that it was a Republican bar.
Sure.
And that things were being discussed in the bar. So he got to know a group, and he felt initially that they, one of them in particular, knew, seemed to know an awful lot about the death of Lord Mountbatten in Sligo in 1979, who was killed in a boat bomb. And there would be kind of jokes from the others about, oh, you wouldn't know much about that now, Sean, would you? That was the guy's name. So then Rupert kind of got to know them more. At the time, he was looking to buy a bar in Ireland anyway, and he certainly had a credibility as well with them at that point. And then they were telling him about this operation they were running through Shannon, where they had somebody at Shannon who was able to get provisional IRA members in and out of the United States. And that was very valuable to them, because at the time it was an enormous issue about IRA members and Sinn Féin members getting visas to go to America. Anybody around the time, I think, would remember Gerry Adams' visa, and the British were absolutely impeccably opposed to him getting a visa, and also Joe Cahill from the IRA in Belfast. And I mean, this was a very, very serious issue, and it actually put a wedge between the US and Britain. I mean, that's how serious it was. But Bill Clinton felt that it could be a kind of a coaxing device to bring the IRA to peace if they were allowed visas to go to America to sell peace to their supporters. But behind their backs, then the IRA had worked out a way through Shannon to get people in and out. And the politics of Shannon in itself plays into it as well, because there was many, many people had moved down from Belfast to live in Shannon, and in the early days of the Troubles. The politics of Shannon were very different from the rest of Clare. You know, you had people from Sinn Féin, and from, there was Bridget McGowski, who was from the INLA's political wing. She was also on the town council. So, there was quite a strong Republican element in the town, and a lot of them worked in the airport, and that certainly played into it.
Okay, and just in effect, people, Republicans are being not smuggled through the airport, but bypassing security, as I understand it?
Yeah. They had somehow worked out a way that they could get people onto planes by bypassing like the usual screening.
Okay.
And Rupert passed that on to the FBI, and then the FBI called him back a few times to try and check the details, because the issue at the time was so serious, because the Clinton administration had a big risk by allowing visas for people like Joe Cahill, and they had to shut down that operation in Shannon, because it all had to come through the official channels if the Clintons' idea of allowing visas was to work.
If they were to allow visas, and then the other hand it was to emerge that people were being smuggled in, it could have scuttled the whole thing. And you mentioned already the political sensitivities around that. For how long did Rupert give this information, and what's he at today? I know he's still alive. Listen.
He was giving information for 7 years in total, a bit over 7 years. And today he's under FBI protection. He's living in the States with his wife Maureen, and they made a lot of money from the spying business, and they live a very comfortable life and seem to be enjoying life.
And what do you make of the story, and how did you come to gain his trust that all of this was opened up to you, Sean?
It took a while, because he'd met other journalists before, or at least spoken to them. But American journalists, it's very hard for them to get a handle on all of this. You know, I think you really have to be in Ireland to really understand everything. Because a few journalists came to say, then they would say, so where's Sligo in relation to Donegal? Or, what on earth is continuity area? And how does that, A lot of things that have to be filled in that for an Irish person don't need to be filled in. And then, I got to know Republicans over the years just as a journalist, and I felt that I had enough information to really get going on it and interviewing people. So we just hit it off. He was a very different person than I thought he would be. I thought, that he would be this big, huge trucker with you only give one-word answers, but he's not. He's actually quite chatty, and he's quite approachable. So that made it a lot easier. And, it took me a year to get my hands on the emails, but once I had those, then I could say down to the minute exactly where he was and who he was talking to and what he was doing. That made it a lot easier. And then once he decided to testify, his wife Maureen kept a very meticulous diary, and that really, really helped as well.
Okay, there's a lot more in the book that we haven't touched on. It's throwing a window open into what was happening. We were talking about the not too distant past either, in this particular one, in terms of the 90s and into the early part of the last decade, as I understand it. Do you How do you think it's going to go down in terms of the book as these stories emerge a little bit more? Are you going to be creating more waves?
I'd say so, yeah. We got a letter to the publisher from the lawyer for MI5 saying that they wanted an urgent copy of the book before it went to publication. But I think we just took the view that if we put it in the shelves, then they're less likely to act on it, you know, or get an injunction. And even if they do, I kind of felt, well, at least they'll have to pay for a copy anyway if it's on the shelves.
You may as well get £2 out of them or whatever the writer's fee may be. Better look for forgiveness than permission as well, as the saying also goes. The book is going down well, I hope?
Yeah, it's going down very well. Yeah, it's getting a lot of interest, you know. There's a bit of a distribution delay in Ennis and I think in a few counties in the West, but I think that should be resolved by tomorrow, if not Monday.
Very good. It's called The Accidental Spy. It's published by Mirror Books. It'll be available very soon, if not already, in many bookshops. And I hope it does go well, Sean, and thanks very much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Kevin.
No bother at all. Take care. Sean O'Driscoll there from Ennis, journalist and author, and his book, in conjunction with one David Rupert, An Accidental Spy, is out now.
You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 midday.